Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
As we all remember, last June, the United States Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision, threw out Section 2 of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, which defined marriage for federal purposes as only between one man and one woman. However, Associate Justice Anthony Kennedy, who wrote the majority opinion in the Windsor ruling, said it's within a state's right to define marriage. Apparently, federal judges have not read the entire opinion and have struck down every marriage protection amendment and state Defense of Marriage Act that has been challenged since, including Pennsylvania's on May 20th. So, we're going to talk about that and the June 30th Hobby Lobby Conestoga Woods Specialties decision concerning the mandate that employers cover abortion and contraception under Obamacare. My guest today is Matt Staver, founder and president of Orlando, Florida-based Liberty Council. Thanks, Matt, for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure to be with you.
You want to tell us a little bit about Liberty Council?
Well, Liberty Council is an international religious liberty, litigation, education, and policy organization, and we advance religious freedom, the sanctity of human life, and the family. We do that through those three different ways: litigation, education, and public policy. Our main headquarters is in Orlando, Florida. We also have offices in Virginia, Washington, D.C., California, and we have hundreds of affiliate attorneys around the country. We also have someone who works for Liberty Council, the former special advisor to Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu, and she works for us in Israel regarding our Israel outreach.
Wow. So you're definitely international. You know, when we're looking at the marriage issue, specifically, let's look at the May 20th Judge E. Jones III, who struck down our Defense of Marriage Act, saying, quote, "We are a better people than what these laws represent, and it is time to discard them into the ash heap of history," unquote. He uses, and I think all the other judges who have thrown at these DOMAs and marriage protection amendments have used, the due process and equal protection clauses of the 14th Amendment. What's some of the history of the 14th Amendment and those clauses specifically, and the way these judges are interpreting them, is that the correct interpretation of those clauses?
No, it's not. In fact, let me comment about this statement by Judge Jones. How much of hubris and absolute ignorance it is to say that we're going to take marriage and put it into the trash bin of history.
Yeah.
You know, worldwide, throughout all of world civilizations, the only time in the world, the first time that there's ever been a same-sex civil union type of relationship recognized was in 2000, and that was in the Netherlands and then Vermont. And the only time that same-sex marriage has been recognized first time in the United States is 2004 in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
So in world history, we're only talking about 14 years out of all the thousands of years of world history, and we're only talking about 10 years in the United States history. The fact of the matter is you cannot redefine marriage any more than you can redefine gravity, and that decision is just as ridiculous as if he said we ought to put the laws of gravity to the trash bin of history, and we're better than that. We believe that we can fly. It's good for the founders, but it's not good for us. We've changed since then. That's absolute ridiculousness, and that's ridiculous here. The 14th Amendment, and certainly nothing in the Constitution, gives a right to same-sex marriage and even alternatively prohibits states from reaffirming the natural created order of marriage as the union of a man and a woman.
In fact, I think last year, Judge Alito, I believe it was, wrote something similar to that there was no constitutional right to same-sex marriage, because he and Clarence Thomas were two of the ones who were the minority four who, you know, voted against would be the right word, but they actually filed, those two, Alito and Thomas, actually filed a dissenting opinion to the DOMA ruling. Part of it said, quote, "Same-sex marriage represents a highly emotional and important question of public policy, but not a difficult question of constitutional law." And it goes on and says, "The Constitution does not guarantee the right to enter into a same-sex marriage."
Well, that's true, but, you know, it doesn't even present a difficult question of public policy any more than it presents a difficult question of public policy as to whether you're going to change any other natural created law as part of the natural order of things, which is gravity, for example.
Yeah,
I mean,
true.
It's not a difficult question to say, are we going to have same-sex marriage or are we going to change the understanding of marriage? I mean, that's not difficult. It's a no-brainer. In history, even the Greeks, as promiscuous as they were, they didn't have same-sex civil unions. Mm-hmm. They didn't have same-sex marriage. This is a destructive position to take because it will definitely have negative implications, not only to the marriage itself. We've seen it happen in the Netherlands, where marriage is just simply falling apart. No one is getting married because it's not a special mm-hmm. relationship
right.
anymore.
Right.
And it will affect negatively children. We see studies, in fact, the Regnerus study most recently out of 2012, a peer-reviewed study, showed that children in same-sex households fare worse in every measurable category mm-hmm. compared to children in households with a mom and a dad. It's just common sense that children get different things from a mother and a father, male and female, bring different characteristics to the relationship that two men and two women simply cannot bring.
Absolutely. And, you know, those homosexual activists, and you brought up the Roman culture, homosexual activists point to that and they say that the exact opposite of what you said. You know, they are reinterpreting history and they're saying that the Romans had same-sex marriage. And
they did not.
Well, I know that, but you know they're so good at they're so effective in their reinterpretation of history. They're so effective in saying we're born gay and such as that. And unfortunately, the American people have fallen for those lies. And you brought up the kids, and like you're saying, common sense says kids need a mom and a dad, but those
yeah.
you know those studies are being thrown out or being totally discarded, or in some cases. Not even brought up in the defense of marriage when, you know, attorneys don't bring those up in some case, the kids thing up in some cases. So it's just yeah. very troubling that we see marriage being thrown out the window and our kids are going to be suffering, I fear, for future generations. Now, in our case, Judge Jones is the federal judge for the Middle District of Pennsylvania. Now, I always thought a federal judge...
He's also, by the way, the judge that ruled on this intelligent design
mm-hmm.
and had some outrageous... comments on that. He's a judge that was appointed by a Republican president,
yes.
not because he had any qualifications mm-hmm. as a judge, but because he was a political contributor.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we need to, you know, President Obama appoints people who are ideologically in line with him. Republicans, unfortunately, appoint people who favor them, and
yeah.
some of them are good, some of those are not good judicially. And this is a guy that from the very beginning has just been really off base.
He has been, yeah. Yeah, I believe he was a big contributor to Governor Tom Ridge. And he recommended him to President Bush. And unfortunately, he was
yeah.
also supported by Arlen Specter and Rick Santorum and greatly
yeah.
supported and pushed. I think he was unanimously confirmed by the Senate. Back in 2002, I believe, but yeah, his
We had him. You know, I've had a chance to meet with him when he got appointed. It was like just an amazing thing for him. He never even envisioned it, and he's somebody who should never have been appointed.
No.
I mean, you don't appoint somebody just because they contribute to political parties. You appoint them because of their judicial philosophy.
Yeah, which he had none or nothing.
No, that's correct. Yeah,
yeah. It's tragic, and unfortunately, we're still suffering under that. I know that you know, like you just brought up the Dover case and that intelligent design case, which is totally ludicrous. The decision, as well as this decision now, which is impacting you know the entire Commonwealth. But again, you know, he's federal judge for the Middle District of Pennsylvania. How can he impact all 67 counties, the entire Commonwealth?
Well, he can't. You know, he can't. It only applies to that particular middle district. So he doesn't even understand the reach of his own opinion.
Well, apparently our governor doesn't either. Apparently our governor doesn't either
well,
because...
And you're right. I mean, what we have right now, I mean, even in Florida, you got a Republican governor, Rick Scott. You got a Republican attorney general, Pam Bondi. And what kind of defense or articulation are they giving to the marriage laws down there? One, for our brief, we would have not had any real defense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's Republicans or Democrats that are running from this or all of a sudden
yeah.
changing their mind, and you can't really change your mind on something this fundamental. If you
right.
do, you really don't have any grounding to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
It's reprehensible. This is a situation where I believe if the courts continue to cross this line, the courts are ultimately going to lose their authority. People are going to say enough is enough, and courts only have the power that they have because people respect their opinions. They can't enforce their opinions. They're just a piece of paper.
Right.
The only enforcement that they have is the executive, and if the executive doesn't want to enforce them, then it's just a piece of paper. I think what ultimately we're looking at is a critical moment in history where the church and people of faith and moral values, I think, may well rise up and say enough is enough. This is ridiculous. The courts have gone too far. They're arrogant. They have no connection to the Constitution. It's just their own bigoted opinion, mm-hmm. just like the bigoted opinion of a Supreme Court in Dred Scott that said blacks weren't human, didn't yeah. have constitutional rights because they were inferior human beings. Mm-hmm. I mean, how ridiculous is that? Or Buck versus Bell in 1927, where John Marshall said, yeah, Virginia, you can sterilize Carrie because three generations of imbeciles are enough. I mean, that's a mm-hmm. shameful statement, and that decision was actually used by Adolf Hitler to begin his euthanasia program over there and his genocide, and that case was cited in the Nuremberg trials in defense of Nazi Germany. I think what we're looking at is we have some bad decisions because we've had some bad individuals mm-hmm. who weren't grounded that wrote them in our history, and not every decision that comes from a judge is worth the respect that people give it. It's only respectful or should be respected if it's consistent with the rule of law, the Constitution, and our natural law.
Right. Yeah, I know people are increasingly getting frustrated with the courts, but unless you have, let's say, Congress, I mean, Congress could impeach some of these judges. And I know here in Pennsylvania, State Representative Daryl Metcalf has, with great pushback from even the Republican Party, of which he's a member, he's begun impeachment proceedings against Kathleen Kane, who's our Democratic Attorney General, who initially refused to defend marriage back in July a year ago when the first lawsuit was brought. And then weeks later, Governor Corbett said he would defend marriage, and in my view, brought a very incompetent attorney, former Supreme Court judge here in Pennsylvania, to defend marriage. And we see how that went when we lost in the on May 20th.
Yeah, I think I think this is a moment in time that is a defining moment in American and literally world history.
Yeah.
In fact, when you look at the world, we're going completely opposite than most of the countries in the world with regards to this issue. I mean,
yeah.
In France, they had a million people. In France,
yeah.
A million people come out to march opposing same-sex marriage. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a country you wouldn't expect that from.
That's for sure.
Country after country after country reject same-sex marriage, and this administration, particularly under this president, mm-hmm. has gone completely the opposite. And
yep.
they're using our state dollars to force other nations around the world to promote and accept same-sex marriage, the whole lesbian, mm-hmm. gay, LGBT
shebang.
Agenda, and abortion.
Yeah,
it's reprehensible
yep.
what's happening. And America is going the wrong direction in world history. I think that this is a defining moment in our time.
Well, I think it is absolutely too. Also, President Obama and the Department of State has threatened to withhold federal aid from countries such as Uganda, who has passed laws dealing with the homosexual issue. So basically they're saying it's our way or you don't get any federal aid from the United States, which is bribery as far as I'm concerned. Now, many times during the battle for marriage in these past few years, I've heard the question, why should government be in the marriage business at all? So what's some of the history behind the government and marriage laws and such as that? What all kind of got that started?
Well, I mean, if you go back originally, government didn't have anything to do with marriage. It was just common understanding. And eventually, when you started to have government create laws, I mean, marriage predates government. Marriage
mm-hmm.
predates any religion. So it wasn't created by religion. It wasn't created by any government.
Right.
It's part of the natural created order. It's always been. So when government started creating different laws to give protections to marriage, because it's so critical to our existence and to our future and to the well-being of children and to our liberty, then that's how that became, where you have this laws that began to protect marriage. But what you ultimately have here is a long history of that. Like, for example, when the United States was 13 original colonies, and then we started to expand out west, there was at least 5 states that were territories at the time that were not states that wanted admission to the United States, become part of another part of the United States
mm-hmm.
of America. They were required as part of their admission to affirm, to reject polygamy and to affirm marriage as the union of a man and a woman as a prerequisite to entering into the union. Why? Because that marriage as the union of a man and woman was critical to the foundation of the country and for liberty. So this has always been way back, and it's not just Utah, it's New Mexico and many other states that were part of this
mm-hmm.
that had that prerequisite requirement.
Okay.
And, you know, what we're looking at now is if we go across this line and say that marriage is the union of a man and woman, and we're going to put all these government benefits around it, and what you're doing is you're elevating it to the highest level of human relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying right there on the same platform of marriage as a man and a woman that has a unitive and a procreative and a spiritual component, we're going to put two same-sex couples. And by the way, once they do that, you're not going to stop polygamy or polyamory.
That's
because
for
there's
sure.
no legal or logical reason to stop it at that point in time.
Yeah.
So we're going to aspire, we're going to encourage our children, our young people, our adults to aspire to this human relationship of the highest magnitude in our society. We're going to put all these benefits and protections mm-hmm. around it. When we do that, we're saying as a policy matter that children don't need fathers and mothers, that son, you don't need a dad. He's mm-hmm. irrelevant to your well-being. Two moms are just as good.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you need a father?
Yeah.
Well, that's as ridiculous as anything I've ever heard. If you believe that that's true, that dad is irrelevant to the well-being of a son or daughter, or vice versa, mom's irrelevant. But take dads and take young boys. Go to any prison, any section of the world, or in particularly in the United States,
mm-hmm.
to the young men's section that are committed there for a violent offense, jail or a prison. Ask them one question, and the one question is, where was your father when you were growing up? And they will say, I had no father.
Yeah.
Not everybody who's fatherless ends up there, but everybody who ends up there, I can guarantee you, they have one thing in common. They were fatherless.
Mm.
There's a consequence to removing mom or dad, male or female, from the family unit.
Yeah. I fear for the nation as we've crossed this line and it's become more and more accepted, the whole concept of a genderless marriage, it's fearful. Well, let's look at some positive things here. On June 30th, the same United States Supreme Court, in the same 5-4 decision, although this was different judges, you know, ruling differently, and it was the good guys won on this one. The Supreme Court ruled that a closely held corporation is exempt from Obamacare's abortion contraception mandate. So let's begin with the definition of a closely held corporation. What is that?
Well, a closely held corporation is a corporation that is either the shareholders, the board of directors, or family members, or alternatively, they're a small group of people. So it's not like hundreds of people on the, like a publicly traded company
mm-hmm.
can have a lot of different people on the board, but also people that own the company. In this particular case, a closely held corporation is a company that is owned and controlled by a small number of people. Now, in terms of the number of what that means, there's not a magical count.
Okay.
So you can't say, well, 5 or 10 people owning a company makes it a closely held corporation, but 15 or 20 does not. You could have a whole family of 15 or 20.
Mm-hmm.
You could have a whole group of investors that is just a small group. You know, and it doesn't make any difference regarding the size. I mean, you have Chick-fil-A, you've got Hobby Lobby. Those are huge corporations, and in some cases, they're worldwide.
Right.
But they're held by family members or close groups. So what was this decision about is the closely held corporation. It doesn't apply to for-profit, publicly traded, or very largely owned corporations. That would be for another day. However, if a large corporation like a publicly traded company or some company that had a lot of owners that's not closely held still had a policy in their practice, and they voted on it in the board of directors with regards to abortion and sanctity of human life, I think at another case going up to the Supreme Court, that would still apply.
Hmm.
So, first of all, you've got the for-profit corporations on this particular decision are entitled to religious free exercise protections. Now, I think that if they had something as part of their policies, no matter how closely or non-closely held, it's going to fall in that category. Nonprofit corporations already had free exercise of religion because they do, despite the fact that nonprofit organizations are not owned by anybody except the public. They are public entities in that respect. They've got board of directors, but they're serving the public in that respect. So you've got a fiduciary duty to the public. They've always had this First Amendment religious free exercise and certainly have a religious free exercise protection after this particular case.
Mm-hmm. And I got a legal question for you. The Supreme Court seemed to lean to use the Religious Freedom Restoration Act and not the First Amendment in reaching this decision. Is that good or bad that they based their decision on a law? I think it was passed in 93, I think, and Bill Clinton signed it. So is that good or bad that they based it on a law rather than the First Amendment?
Well, it's what was brought to the court. So it wasn't a First Amendment case. It was a religious free exercise case under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
So that's just the way it was
so,
okay.
Yeah, that's the way it was brought. And there's good reason for that, but that's why that was the issue that was presented before them.
Okay, okay. And already, I mean, the Senate, I mean, not just the Senate, but liberals in general have been in a total uproar since that decision. And just last week, the Senate failed to advance a bill that would have repealed part of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act because they specifically want to make sure that all companies are forced to make available to their employees abortion contraception. And thankfully that effort failed in the Senate. And I know there's also been a bill introduced in the House, but it's not going to go anywhere. And unfortunately, our quote-unquote pro-life Senator Bob Casey voted for that bill in the Senate that would have forced companies like Hobby Lobby and Conestoga Woods to provide the abortion and contraception against the religious convictions.
You know, I think this really shows the misplaced values of Senator Harry Reid and a number of people in the United States Senate. That's just been absolutely dysfunctional. We've got all these crises going on around the United States and the world, and they spend time trying to take away religious free exercise rights. Why? Because they want to push their radical abortion agenda. So they want to remove the very core of our founding principles of free exercise of religion and replace it with a death motif of abortion. I mean, whoever voted for it should never be put back in any office, Republican or Democrat. I mean, they, in my view, they've just forfeited any kind of reason that anyone on any side of the aisle should vote for them ever again. They ought to be all turned out of office. And we're going to publicize the people who voted for this. This is absolutely a horrible vote. However, the good news is they didn't have enough people to pass it. So it's dead in the Senate, and it's certainly not going to pass in the House.
All right, for sure, for sure. And, you know, the interesting point you brought up, you know, the Democrats are always blaming the Republicans for doing nothing, for concentrating on unimportant issues. And then, as you're saying, here we have Harry Reid and the Democrats. Most of the Democrats, or not most, but, well, yeah, probably most of the Democrats in the Senate voting to take away religious freedoms. Now, the court said in that ruling, in the Hobby Lobby ruling, that it does not, quote, provide a shield for employers who might cloak illegal discrimination as a religious practice, unquote. So will this decision filter down to help Christian bakers and photographers and florists who do not want to bake for or photograph or provide flowers for homosexual weddings? Will that have any impact on those, like, you know, sweet cakes for Melissa?
Not really, because the Religious Freedom Restoration Act only applies whenever the federal government is involved. And all of those kinds of cases are dealing with state or local laws that are being applied. So you'd have to then go back to the religious free exercise right of the First Amendment. And in order to do that, you have to combine it with another constitutional right, which is absolutely nuts. But Scalia, in 1990, I believe it was, wrote the Smith decision. And in the Smith decision, basically took a little bit of a different turn and suggested that the free exercise of religion clause of the First Amendment can only have the same strength that it had previously throughout the history of the Supreme Court interpreting it if it were combined with another constitutional right, such as free speech, equal protection, etc. So if you combine it with something else, which makes no sense, that alone it doesn't have its same authority, then yes, you could bring that. And so that's part of the reason why people use the Religious Freedom Restoration Act passed by Congress. But again, that only applies to federal action, not to state action, so you can't use that in a state action.
Okay, but I know there are some efforts, including here in Pennsylvania, to get a state-level Religious Freedom Restoration Act passed.
Yes, so, and a number of states do have local state Religious Freedom Restoration Acts passed that are similar to the federal one. And so in that particular case, you could rely upon your state Religious Freedom Restoration Act if there is one. Or if not, there needs to be something that is passed to protect religious employers and people, individuals. That's, in fact, what was attempted out in Arizona. And, you know, this thing got all caught up in the media, and Governor Jan Brewer said she was going to veto it, and she vetoed the law, which was absolutely a bad move by a Republican governor to do that, and completely misinformed as to the intent of that particular law.
Well, if folks wanted to contact Liberty Counsel, how could they do that?
They can contact Liberty Counsel by going to our website, lc.org, that's lc.org, or they can call us toll-free, 800-671-1776. That's 800-671-1776. Just remember 671. and then you know the 800, and then obviously the Declaration of Independence year 1776. Yeah, 800-671-1776.
I love your phone number. Hey, you take care, man. I always appreciate talking with you and to get your expert opinion. So you take care and keep up the good work.
Thanks. My pleasure.
Okay.
Thank you.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.